Since May 2022, the Italian lawyer Francesca Albanese has been the UN's special rapporteur, or advisor, on human rights in the occupied Palestinian territories. Her reports, she's written eight, have seen her excoriated by Israel and led her to being sanctioned by the United States, even by Trumpian standards. Marco Rubio's abuse of Albanese has been extraordinary. Last November, we welcomed her to Late Night Live to discuss her fifth report, Genocide as Colonial Erasure. We welcome her back now to discuss her eighth, in which she explores what she finds is the failure of nations like ours to do our duty by the Palestinians. The horrors of the past 2 years, she writes, are not an aberration, but the culmination of a long history of complicity. Forbidden to enter the United States, Francesca Albanese joins us from Cape Town, where yesterday she delivered her report, Gaza Genocide, a Collective Crime. Francesca, welcome back to Late Night Live. Is more at stake here than the fate of the Palestinians?
Yes, absolutely. What is at stake is the multilateral system that came to existence after the Second World War, which was supposed to protect all of us from peace, from war, and ensuring peace and development. We can say that we have improved globally over time. The system has become globally more democratic. The countries, the UN was made of 50 states 8 years ago, and today consists of 193 members. The problem, and there has been improvement in terms of human rights. However, this war against quote unquote Hamas, as it has been sold and amplified in the global, in the West in particular, has led us to see some of the most horrific crimes that should have been relegated to history and continue to be so. So it's not the international law per se that is not functioning, it's the ability of member states to bring the most powerful states and the interest behind these states to account. Today we have in the United States and Israel leading a very violent policy of domination and control, not just in the region, but vis-a-vis other countries. And the United States is bullying everyone into compliance with its interpretation of the world, of the rules of the game. And so this is very, very dangerous. But this genocide has already marked the mind, especially of an entire, really an entire global community, and especially the young generation. For them, this is memory in the making. They will not let it go.
But isn't the story of the last 6 months the fact that a number of nations are no longer willing to be bullied by the United States into supporting the war?
Look, I think at the people's level, yes, never had there been a hiatus so profound between the governments and the people. I see uprising everywhere. Rather than uprising, strikes and mobilization and people speaking out everywhere. And one could say, yeah, but after 2 years, yeah, but there have been other genocides that not have been stopped, like the genocide of the Tutsi in Rwanda or the genocide of the Bosnians. I mean, it's not... So there are crimes that have been known and didn't generate the reaction that the genocide in Gaza has generated. I mean, no one today understand Israel as other than an apartheid state, than a criminal enterprise toward the Palestinians. So it will be difficult to go back. It will be impossible to go back to where we were. So today, what remains adamant is the lack of will. It's not lack of capacity. It's lack of will of the majority of those in power in the West to comply with international law, which is true for your country, even more for my country, Italy, which is one of the main providers of weapon, political and diplomatic support for Israel. And this is the problem. The problem is with the lack of compliance with international rules that have been mutually agreed upon by those in power. And the question is, why? Who controls the authorities that are supposed to protect all of us? What kind of interests are stronger than the will of the people and the need to stop a genocide?
You mention Australia in the report, several places. We are one of the third states that you criticise. And in the very first words of your report, you say the ongoing genocide in Gaza is a collective crime sustained by the complicity of influential third states that have enabled long-standing systematic violations of international law, as you were saying a moment ago. Do you see the possibility that states like Australia may one day be held accountable in international forums for not taking the action you believe they should take in order to stop the genocide?
Frankly, considering how the relative weight of the Australia's responsibility compared to others of Germany or the United States or the United Kingdom, I don't see it likely for Australia to be brought, for example, before the International Criminal Court, as it has happened, for example, it's happening right now for Italy. But it's not to be ruled out. It depends on Australian lawyers, civil society, and, you know, there can be anyone initiating a case, and then it depends on the court. I don't think that that the only risk for the Australian government is that one. I think that there can be, and I hope that there will be, accountability at the political level. I hope that there will be a realization among Australians of what the government has contributed to with its actions and inactions, continuing to aid and assist with actions or silence, a government that has committed, actually a state that has committed crimes for decades, that has maintained a settler colonial apartheid that in the last 2 years has turned genocidal. What I find more interesting, three things. There are Australians who have been fighting in the army, and they have to be considered suspect. As Commissioner Chris Sidoti has said, they have to be investigated, and if there is enough evidence, prosecuted, and if the judge is convinced of their responsibilities and their liability, convicted. There are high senior leaders of the in position of command in the Israeli army who have Australian nationality. There are Israelis who are traveling to Australia. There are Australian businesses and Australian universities implicated in supporting Israel. Of course, it's a different, that of the university is a different kind of responsibility. But also, you know, as many genocide scholars remind us, denying the genocide is one of the leading elements to have genocide. And in Australia, I've seen it myself when I was there, and then on occasions following the debate, you have Australians who keep on denying the genocide using their position of power, well, their access to the media.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I am talking to Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories. Francesca, let's go through the criticisms you make of Australia, because I think that will illustrate the bigger argument that you are making about all of the nations that you see as complicit in these in the genocide. The first criticism you make of Australia is that it withdrew funding from the United Nations relief agency UNRWA. But this was only brief, wasn't it?
Yes, Australia was among the 18 states which suspended the funding of UNRWA.
We're now funding it again, I think to the tune of about $130 million.
Yeah, but Australia has not done the other things I was saying. Australia has never opened an investigation on its own citizens who are fighting in the army and who lives in colonies.
You don't think much of Australia's sanctioning of extremist settlers and of those far-right Israeli ministers Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. You say such isolated actions effectively condone the Israeli state system and structures. How's that?
Look, how long have the debate in Australia focused on how brutal, barbarian, and impossible to tolerate and to be uprooted the military or paramilitary groups that had attacked Israel on October 7 has lasted in Australia. Months and months. Has the debate concerning Israel and the criminals who are, the alleged criminals who are at the head of the Israeli government, have they ever been called out with the same vehemence? No. The thing is that there is a different posture toward the Palestinians and toward the Israelis, not considering that it's Israel, the oppressor. So yes, of course, the sanctions against the extremist settlers are important. But what about cutting ties with the state of Israel because it commits heinous crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, and is accused of committing genocide? Why maintaining ties? Why continuing to treat Israel as business as usual? Today, would Australia maintain relations with apartheid South Africa, which has jailed Nelson Mandela and thousands of people and killed countless people?
We did for a very long time.
That is actually, no, wait a second. The thing is that, would you do that now? No. Because if you did it for a long time for South Africa, why don't you do that for Israel? Because Australia, like any self-defined liberal democracy, has special ties with Israel. You don't see Israel, not you as a person, but in general, Western governments tend to relate to Israel as if it was a normal state. And it's not. It's an apartheid state. And it's not spoken as such by the Australian government. Does the Australian government, has the Australian government ever referred to the state of Israel as an apartheid state?
I think not.
What are the steps that has Australia taken in follow-up to the ICJ advisory opinion that declared the occupation unlawful and to be dismantled totally and unconditionally and reminded member states of their responsibility not to recognize as legal the consequences of that unlawfulness?
We say a good deal about, we say a certain amount about that. But
Francesca... Yeah, but eventually you don't align the actions.
Look, I understand.
Yeah, this is the problem.
I understand. I'm trying to sort of unpick all of this. It seems to me that your argument is that the world should boycott Israel's trade. Would that be right? That it's time for a complete boycott of trade?
Suspending trades is an obligation. You cannot trade with a state that commits crimes. Not only maintaining the trade might make the trading partners complicit in crimes depending on what you are trading on. There are countries which are trading the electronic chips that are produced with a technology that is also developed by exploiting Palestinians, certain techniques, surveillance technologies that is used
and tested
on the Palestinians. Or dual use materials, exactly. So Israel is so embedded in the global economy that I understand that it's difficult to take it out. But what does surprise you of cutting ties with Israel? Isn't it what had to be done with the government and the state of South Africa in order to push it to dismantle the white South Africa?
A powerful question.
How do you, it's clear. Look, the Palestinians have renounced armed resistance in the early 90s. And after that, the colonies have grown from 70 to 300, with increased forced displacement, five wars that have killed in Gaza only 5,000 people, keeping Palestinians under blockade for 17 years, which has been lethal to the life of many, including children. We don't even talk about the environmental, the catastrophic environmental war of the ordnance that exploded or unexploded has been used against Gaza for decades, but the malformation, and it's documented, was quite widespread already before the amount of ammunitions that has been used against Gaza, which some experts estimate being around the equivalent of eight nuclear bombs. I mean, I don't know how they can do these calculations, but I mean, to say this destruction, who's going to be accountable for? The Israeli army has been killing 20,000 children. It's so ginormous that neither you nor I can fully absorb this. But imagine a child you love and multiply by 20,000. This is, and Israel has deliberately targeted journalists, doctors, erasing all churches,
yes,
all mosques, destroying aid. But it's not, of course. It's one of the most monstrous things that you and I have seen in our living experience.
Francesca, I have no doubt of what you're saying. Can we go to another couple of the details that you criticize of Australia's response to Israel? And one of them is about our recognition, finally, of a Palestinian state. You say this is an important step. It's tardy and it remains symbolic with no tangible effect in addressing the ongoing genocide. But it's a good step, isn't it?
Well, it's better than a slap in the face. So yes, okay, it's a good step. And what has it meant to the Palestinians? It seems to me a good step as a face saver for Australia, for the UK, for France. But excuse me, in the time of a genocide, while has Australia not joined the call of a number of countries like South Africa, Colombia, Namibia, Senegal, and others to suspend, they have agreed upon three things. Our territory will not be used for impunity, so there will be investigation and prosecutions of people who might have committed crimes, primarily those who have received an arrest warrant. Second, no ports used to transfer anything dangerous to Israel, and no weapons. So no weapons directly or indirectly to Israel. Can Australia do that? What has Australia done after recognizing Palestine? Because recognizing the state of Palestine means even more than not intervening to protect the self-determination of the Palestinian people, which is already extremely problematic. The recognition of the state imposes the other states to intervene in case of violation of the territorial integrity or the principle of non-interference and to support the self-defense of the Palestinians. What is Australia doing to protect the Palestinians from Israeli aggression?
You make the interesting point that the conditions Australia has placed on the recognition of Palestine, like, you know, it must be a demilitarized state, there must be financial reforms. You make the point that these are incompatible with self-determination.
Absolutely, absolutely. Excuse me, who is Australia to tell the Palestinians to be demilitarized after they have renounced armed resistance and this is what they have found themselves into? It's Israel. Why no one asks Israel to be demilitarized when there is the entire international community always ready to stand in Israel's defense, including Arab countries? Because let's not forget, Jordan has been protecting Israel from the retaliation after Israel had attacked without any reason Iran. Iran has retaliated and Jordan has protected Israel. So, you know, the question, you see the kind of pressure put on the oppressor, it's very orientalist. It's always the Palestinians who are blamed.
You make the point that for a very long time, the United States has provided an enormous amount of military support to Israel, and that this support has grown since October 7th, 2023. Is it your view that that support makes the United States a criminal conspirator with Israel?
Complicit. Absolutely. This is my argument, that the United States is not just supporting, ending, and abetting. It's fully involved in the crimes that Israel is... many of the crimes that Israel is committing against the Palestinians. And there are certain cases in which... documented cases, of course, where the U.S. Army has been implicated in using force against the Palestinians in Gaza, especially in the context of that disgraceful experience that has been the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. But also think in terms of veto, using its political power to shield Israel from accountability over and over, delaying ceasefires, imposing conditions on the Palestinians, which clearly violate their right of self-determination. Whatever I've been fiercely attacked for having condemned, together with a number of other experts, including Australian Professor Ben Saul, the so-called peace plan. Of course, everyone has hailed, including us, the release of the hostages, and has hailed the cessation of fire against Gaza. The problem is that we knew that it wouldn't last because this is not Israel's intention. And Israel, according to that so-called peace plan, has never been put in the conditions to abide by international law, which means withdrawing the troops, dismantling the colonies, and stop exploiting Palestinian resources. These are the three things that must be done in order to have peace.
What does being sanctioned by the United States mean for you?
It's horrible. It comes with practical inconveniences, assets frozen. I used to live in the U.S. I have a U.S. daughter. My family risked to be arrested or to be fined up to $1 million. And so any other U.S. person residing or living or working in the U.S. having economic ties with me. And the thing is that, does it stay? Does it stop to the United States? Clearly not. Because of the SWIFT system, I cannot have a credit card anymore. I cannot have economic transactions. I travel all the time and I need to travel with cash. I cannot rent a car. It's incredible, or being banned from the U.S. and not being able to go to the United Nations. Why did I deliver my report from Cape Town? Because I was invited to deliver the annual Nelson Mandela lecture, and still I couldn't go to the United States.
Being sanctioned doesn't seem to have discouraged you in the least, Francesca.
Not at all, rather the contrary. Because it's not about me. This is the beauty of humanity, and this genocide has transformed me. I have never been an activist. I've been a quiet person doing her job, legal analysis, legal work, yes, with a strong sense of justice, but that used to be lived in the domestic space. Now it's out there. They have brought the activist that clearly was not there out, and is not even being activist, seriously. Not that I have a lot of respect for the activists, but I'm not. I keep on reading, carrying out investigations, and writing my reports. So there is very little activism in these. But however, the sense of justice is in me, as a commandment, is as acute as ever.
Francesca, thank you for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It was nice.
I've been speaking to Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Occupied Territories.